So 7 years ago,
it is now my joy and pleasure to invite up our guest preacher this morning, Dr. Stephanie Smith Matthews, who is a professor of Old Testament and Hebrew, did I get right, at Point Loma Nazarene University. We are so, so grateful to get to learn from you this morning. So come on up.
Connect a little bit more with each of you today. I'm doing something new. I've never held a phone and preached before, so we'll try it out together. Hopefully it's not too distracting to you as well, but I thought maybe it would allow me to move around a little bit more in your space that you have here. Today we're going to be looking at two passages that we heard from Hosea and then our gospel reading. They're going to remind us something about the character of God, something that may comfort us, it may convict some of us. And then we're going to affirm a life principle that most of us probably might be left with questions. What to do with these general principles? Be a reminder at the end that you are all here in a community, and for those of you who are a regular part of this community, bring those questions to each other and to God. How do we work this out together? I wouldn't pretend to know that today. So let's start in Hosea and get to know this God once again. Hosea chapter 11 starts out in the voice of God, prophet. God is speaking in the first person, and God refers to God's people, Israel. Throughout the Bible, when we see Israel, it can refer to a people group. It can connect to the Jewish people who remain to this day. It can refer to the land that we currently call Israel and Palestine. And in certain ways, it can be used as a symbol of all, especially kind of graft ourselves into that. I just want to mention that because of issues that are going on. Can that hear? Yeah, is this on? Want to try this one instead? We good? Okay. I just wanted to mention that about Israel because with everything going on, as we read through this passage, different things from today might come to mind, and that's okay. I'll be focusing more on the universal principle, how we fit into this passage as well. So God says, when Israel was a child, I loved them. And out of Egypt, I called my child. This is a reminder of that beginning story that's often used as the beginning point for the people of Israel in the Old Testament or Hebrew Bible. The founding story that God saved them from oppression and slavery under Pharaoh. And God continually reminds them that this is the beginning of their story of this particular relationship with God. Now, up to this point in Hosea, God has been pretty upset about the ways in which probably the leaders of the kingdom of Judah, so the leaders of the people called Israel, have been acting. They've been unjust. They've been seeking out political alliances. They've probably been greedy. And God has been speaking harshly in ways that are hard for us to read. But here in chapter 11, we get a pause and God says, hold on. When this Israel was a child, I loved them. But the more I called to them, the more they went from me. So that's the setting of the image that we see here. God who loves a people, who loved them as a child. We're going to see references to babies and toddlers in a second. But also a people who continue to go from God, and probably particularly leaders of a people who turn from God. Let's look at verse 3 together to get more of this image. It was I who taught them to walk. Have you ever been there in one of those moments when a baby is beginning to walk? They toddle around, maybe the cute little chubby flesh of their arms. Maybe you haven't seen that or observed that, but you've been there for another moment of wonder. I'm reminded in this kind of moment when I've held my nephews at my favorite kind of age or stage, and we'll be at my parents' house and looking out the window and where they live, there's trees with lots of leaves, also lots of wind. And these leaves right outside their window, they have different colors, one side to the other. So when the wind blows, they kind of shimmer. And when I hold the baby right at that age, they look outside, eyes big, wow. And I can't help but join them in the presence of that moment, right? And I'm excited again. God is pausing here at the middle of all this righteous anger and saying, I remember when I was there with you, and we shared that presence and that wonder together. I held them in my arms. They didn't know that I healed them. I healed them. I led them with kindness and love. I was to them like those who lift infants to their cheek. And I, the creator of the universe, bent down to them to feed them. But, verse 7, you, my people, are bent. I love that English translation. God bends down to feed, but the people are bent on turning away. And so we pause here, the kind of transition between 7 and 8, I imagine a pause as God in this prophecy is remembering the previous chapters. You're bent on turning away. We're going to get one example of some of the things they do when they turn away. That's where you are, and I am upset about this. And we'll remember all those prophecies of destruction and of judgment, of an angry God who executes God's wrath. And then God says, but how can I give you up, my child? How could I hand you over, precious one? My heart recoils within me. This is God speaking. My heart recoils within me at the idea of that. My compassion grows warm and tender. Listen to this. God says, I will not execute my fierce anger, for I am God and no mortal. I am the Holy One in your midst. A verse before that, we said they were calling on the Most High, these leaders. They were crying out. They were praying in God's name. And God says, the Most High does not raise them up at all. They're bent on schemes of violence, sending swords, and as they were doing so, they were praying on God's name. And God says, yeah, I was there. I am with you. But that wasn't me. Because I am God and no mortal. The Holy One is in your midst, and I will not come in wrath. And right after that, we're told they, the people, shall go after the Lord. After God is righteously indignant and God says, I love you. I will not come in wrath. This violence thing is not my thing. Oh, look, the people will flock back home, trembling like the wings of birds. What does it take for us to come back home to God? Is it a God who looks like we just heard? So we turn from there to Jesus' words in the Gospel of Luke, chapter 12. We're going to have a question. We're going to have another question, as often happens in the parables, and then we're going to get a story. So someone in the crowd said to Jesus, Teacher, tell my brother to divide the family inheritance with me. Now, we're not given any background. We don't know if this person, if they're left out, will be destitute. We don't know if these are two really wealthy people who are just playing games with money. We don't know. We're just given the question. And so Jesus, as he often does, sees beyond the initial question to the heart matter. I think Jesus often is one who teaches us, you know, you're asking this question, which is a tricky one to answer. But if we could just deal with the root issue, the question would resolve itself. At least that's how I often read what Jesus is doing here. So he says to them, friend, who set me to be a judge or arbiter over you? Jesus, God, is saying, who made me judge over you? It's like, well, as a reader, I think I read a few verses that say that you are the judge over us. So he asks this like surprising question that gets the person to stop. Often we come charging in with our questions, right? I'm ready to pin you down. Wait, what? So he gets the person to pause. And then Jesus cautions them and says, be careful. Be on your guard against all kinds of greed. For one's life does not consist in the abundance of possessions. And then he told them a parable to illustrate the story. Here's what she answered. Jesus said this, the land of a rich man produced abundantly. So we have a person who's already rich. They have land, and then they get richer because they have more stuff. And this person thought to themselves, what should I do? Right, this is a good question. I'm given more than I need. What should I do? But then there's the second half of the question that shows some of their assumptions. I have no place to store my crops. Now, I guess we could assume that this person has already fed everyone who's hungry in their town and given away all that they could and needs to store it for next year. parables are open like that. You can read it how you will. Maybe you're more gracious than I am. I'm guessing didn't think of that. And they want to store it for themselves. But whatever it is, they're saying, where should I store my crops? And then Jesus describes the person's idea is to just build a bigger barn so they could store more stuff. But here's where they land. They say, once I do that, I'll say to myself, self, you've got enough. So relax. Self, you have enough. So relax, because you are taken care of. But God said to them, you fool. I think this is something that we know. When the rich get richer and they hoard it to themselves, and they think that answers the deepest problems in their life, God says, you fool. You're storing up treasures for yourself, but you're not rich toward God. You're not rich towards a God who bends down to feed. And you've forgotten what it's like to be an infant with God, to be vulnerable, but to be safe, to be present, to have wonder. They've forgotten, and maybe we've forgotten that about them. As I look at these two passages and put them together, see the people identified as problems and see the character of how God speaks to and about them, I have a few things that I think we could take away. One is to remember that our life is not our possessions. For each of us and each of our circumstances, that is very different. For the one who prayed today that they've lost their job again, or the one who fears that they may lose their job, that strikes you in a particular way. I have need. My life is not my possessions. To the one who just got their dream job, I don't know if it pays well or not, or if it's just a dream job in other ways, but the one who has more, that is fantastic, and your life is not your possessions. To those who are rich and want to hoard it, their life is not in their possessions, and we see that. These passages also cause us to remember that precious relationship with God. God gets described in a lot of ways, and some people act out who God is to us in a lot of ways. God here is one who remembers what it was like when you were a baby, both spiritually and in your relationship with God, but just in life. Pauses when God can be righteously indignant. Says, let's remember wonder. So maybe that's you today. Maybe you are righteously indignant about things going on in the world. And just for a moment, God says, pause with me and remember what it's like to be safe and precious and wonder. It's also a call to imitate Christ. Not those mortals who play being God, but to imitate Christ, who does not devour others with their schemes, like those described in Hosea, but who bends down to feed. I invite you to a moment of prayer before we transition. We're going to take communion together. For some of us, prayer and silence is nice, and so I'm going to offer that space here. If silence makes it antsy, feel free to do whatever you need to do to have more of a prayerful moment. And after a few moments, I'll call up Pastor Molly together. Let's pray for a moment in silence. Lord, I thank you for your word, and I thank you for the reminders today. I pray that those who have more questions that they began with would seek comfort in you, that this community would continue to lift each other up. Renew our hope, God. Some of us need it so desperately. We ask these things in your name. Amen.